I'm quite enjoying this one.
Have you still got a drumstick in?
Tactfully removed it from my rectum. I thought nobody had noticed.
And that's the beginning of the show.
Okay,
and take three. Season 4, episode 15.
Indeed.
We're back.
Yes,
we have the dazzling Adam Sweet here.
Hello again.
We do. He is dazzling. In fact, we all have sunglasses on as we speak. That dazzling.
Ladies, prepare, because as we know from the Lug Radio facts, Adam Sweet causes women to have orgasms, apparently.
Oh, right.
Really?
Okay. So we have Adam Sweet. Who else have we got?
Really?
We've got Stuart Large Fridge.
No.
Stuart Large Fridge.
I'm Stuart Langridge. Stuart he's Large Aid Baldshaw.
I'm Aid
Baldshaw. And he's Jonathan Edward James Bacon.
And you, for that, incidentally.
Didn't need that.
What have we got on this show of a local radio?
We've got Becky Hogg from the Open Rights Group.
We do! The British version of the EFF.
Chris Waddle.
Which isn't the FSFF.
Chris Waddle.
Chris Waddle.
No, the FSF and the EFF are different organisations.
Yes,
the EFF,
they are.
Both of which involve Chris Waddle. And neither of them involve Chris
and
Waddle.
And bags of otters' noses.
And we also have on the show, if you could go back in time and change something about the course of history to make Linux more popular these days, what would you do?
And it doesn't involve killing Bill.
It does involve killing dogs,
There's
though.
There's a film about that.
Kill Bill.
And Kill Bill 2.
No, I don't think that's about personal. What you think.
What else do we talk? Are we going to talk about?
We talked about Linux used to be traded on the fact that it was more secure, more stable, and faster. Is it still the case?
Ooh. Yep. Ooh, and we're going to talk about integrating Linux applications with free free culture and
free
Creative
things.
Commons content out there on the internet.
And we're going to talk about some emails.
Yep, and Lug Radio Live.
And we're going to talk about a certain extravaganza that will be occurring at Lug Radio Live.
There will be.
There will be a gongish
extravaganza.
It is going to be gongish.
And just in case it's not clear, it's definitely nothing to do with bum love.
Recently, I updated my operating system and got a new version of Rhythmbox.
You did it when you were at CBIT, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
I can't believe that. You took your only laptop at CBIT and you dist upgraded it to a not released operating system.
It was a fast internet connection in the hotel room.
He's upgraded it to Ubuntu Feisty owned.
But if that had gone wrong, you'd have been unbelievably fucked.
Well, I doubt it. I mean, whenever I've upgraded.
Did you mark all your data at first?
Hell
no. BRD.
Well, I backed up my songs to an iPod.
To a Mythbox.
But none of the data you actually give a shit about.
Hey, I give a big shit about my music collection. It's my pride and joy.
Well, yeah, but just imagine how long it would take you to go and BitTorrent it all down again. Not that long.
BitTorrent, what is this thing you speak of?
Okay, then go and rip it from all the CDs that are in your cupboard if you want to. Get it back. You've already got backups
or
of music
SCP
connection.
I have. From your Mythbox.
I've got all 15 ACDC CDs.
CHN. Right, anyway, sorry.
No, fans, that is not the rock band you're talking about either. Connection.
Oh. Anyway, I upgraded to Feisty, and there's a new Rhythmbox in there. And one of the cool things about Rhythmbox is that it has inbuilt support for Jamendo. It's got Rhythm. Thanks.
Jamendo.
Jamendo, which is a...
WTF?
Jamendo is like...
a Creative Commons music label.
Yeah, basically it's a label.
Label.
Yeah,
yes,
so you can go and listen to tunes online, and then if you like it, you can download the album, and it downloads over BitTorrent.
Ah.
Yeah. And the idea, you can go and buy the album.
No, that's Magnitude.
That's Magnitude.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought Jamendo was like Magnitude.
It is, apart from the buy-in bit, as far as I'm aware.
So Jamendo is just a repository of free music?
Basically.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so Magnitude support is also in there, and you can buy the music from within Rhythmbox as well. So,
oh, really? Wow.
So I was thinking, this is pretty cool, and I've been thinking about this for a while, you know, about integrating free music and free video and stuff like that into
You've
software.
Been thinking about it for about a week.
No, I have. I've been talking about this for a long time.
Bastion talked about this kind of thing at Lug Radio Live last year, didn't he?
Yeah. And
the thing is, the point of this discussion is, why isn't this happening? I mean... It's like we've got this fantastic free operating system, and we've got all this amazing free content out there. You know, there's
Jikosha does it, right?
Well, Jikosha does it with free sound.
With free sound. I mean, in Mr. Bacon's defense, he has been talking about this for quite a while.
Thank you, Mr.
And we've talked about things like having OpenOffice go away and get clip art from openclipart.org, for example, stuff like that.
It's a no-brainer, really.
So, like you said, there are loads and loads and loads of these repositories. You get, you know, iTunes, it ties into the iTunes music store and stuff like that. We can't do commercial content, But one really good way of getting all the free culture, Creative Commons stuff in front of people is to make it available in Rhythmbox.
Because that's the thing. I mean, the big killer feature with iTunes when it first came out, of course, was the fact that not only could it obviously talk to the iPod, which is you could get music on the go.
Imagine
easy.
That. Like an astonishing. Piece of Apple software. I can talk to a piece of Apple hardware. Wow.
It's stunning, yeah. But that was obviously a boon, because at the time, you didn't really get anything like that. And obviously, within the media player, you could listen to radio, you could listen to your music, you could stick it into party mode and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of, to me, what a media player is all about. And we're starting to see that now in the free software world.
That's actually a very good point. I used Rhythmbox for the first time about 18 months ago.
Can Banshee do this, by the way?
Yes. Well, you can't do the Magnitune Jamendo, but Banshee's got support for internet radio.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that was the thing. When I first used Rhythmbox, I thought, oh, radio, what's that? Clicked on it. I mean, I was kind of vaguely aware internet radio existed.
You used to call it the wireless in your day, didn't you?
Yeah, the wireless. Either wireless. You're a fucking fine one to talk.
Fucking ancient bastard.
90 fucking years old. Shut up.
Old man Bradshaw.
And I thought, wow, look at, and there were loads of radio stations in there. And you start thinking, well, cool, and start looking into it.
Were they all shit?
Or in Rhythmbox's case, three radio stations.
One of them was old game tunes from Commodore 64. Which I thought was brilliant. I was really impressed when I saw that.
I bet they've got a handsome audience. Fucking Nora.
Might be me and the one other guy, but so what?
8-bit classics. What do you
scrawny now, that's a day. Now, I think you're confusing things slightly. Your point's basically right, but Rhythmbox has always had a limited selection of radio stations. I think you're thinking of StreamTuner. Because StreamTuner is another program which lets you browse Shoutcast, Live 365, and all these different radio stations. Because one thing I know I've talked to you about, Ak, I think I showed you StreamTuner, you're like, wow, this is cool. And then we were saying, why don't they integrate this into Rhythmbox?
Yeah.
Because there's basic radio support in Rhythmbox that Ak says, you know, it's been for a while. But yeah. StreamTuner has got like hundreds of different radio stations. And it's good for like, I mean, for example, when I was at the UDS, I didn't have any of my music on my laptop. And I just tuned into a metal radio station.
Do you want to just clarify what UDS is?
Ubuntu Developer Summit. Mm-hmm. The next one is in Spain.
But there are loads of repositories of freely licensable stuff out there. It's not just, I don't think there are any repositories of freely licensable porn, are there? The whole goal of the porn market is to make you pay money for pornography.
xnxx.com apparently.
I'm sorry, I'm in the presence of an expert, obviously.
If you want to go on web 2.0, you go to PornoTube.
Really?
Apparently. Somebody told me about
anyway,
it this week.
Anyway, can we not talk about pornography?
What about the Hun as well? Anyway.
Shut up about fucking...
Notice I'm being particularly quiet here.
Allinternals.com.
Shut up!
Jonah knows for God's sake. Far too much but about this subject.
Barnyardbabes.com.
There are things... Shut up! Jesus! But there are things like free stock photography sites, and I'd love to see that in the GIMP, because I spend quite a lot of time, if I'm trying to mock something up in the GIMP, go off to a stock photography site, pull down a Creative Commons photo, or search Flickr for CC licensed photos.
Yeah.
And I'd love a plug-in.
And scrolling through the two pages of results.
No, fucking Flickr's got a shitload of them. I mean, they're all pictures of, you know, some bloke's house.
Or phone box.
There was
but if you look at stock photography sites, they tend to have lots of pictures which are dead useful if you're putting together a website or something. So someone will have a very close-up picture of a box.
Sorry, part of Jono's house just fell down.
Yeah, nice. So, I mean, and it wouldn't be that difficult to write a GIMP plugin to do it. And now that I've said that, I may do it. Another fucking project on my list to suck up to.
Another piece of half-finished code on the internet for Mr. Langridge.
Yes. I mean, it's rock on. But we could do that. I'd love to see things like that.
Well, it's like Elliot. I mean, Elliot from Open Advantage wrote a thing called Flickr Lily. It was his first Rails project, and that just searches Creative Commons content on Flickr.
Okay.
And he used it mainly because he wanted images for slides, for presentations. Okay. And I said to him, you know, this really should be built into OpenOffice. You know, because the great thing about that, because you know what the problem was like in the old days, where you get clip art with your word processor, and then you'd use the same three things over and over again,
and you'd use the same ones as everybody else. You'd get a flyer from somebody, or you get a party invitation from somebody, and they've all got the same fucking balloons on that you've got.
As can be seen in doctor surgeries across the land.
Exactly.
Fucking shitty word art.
And you know
because of your poor health at the moment.
Join our cancer clinic. Balloons.
But you've got, I mean, you've got Open Clip Art, for example, which is trying to build up this library of that sort of clip art.
Yeah.
So you go, oh, I need to do a party invitation, give me some balloons or a picture of a present.
We should get the raccoon in there.
We should get
Jimac to recreate it in SVG format.
SVG and then do it.
The fucking choin raccoon.
I'd love to see that tied into OpenOffice, for example. And I think some people have talked about, you can certainly install the clip art from openclipart.org as a package under Debian based
Linuxes.
Well,
it gets all of the clip art.
None of it. It's not very big. I mean, it's not a massively comprehensive library yet. There's probably 1,000 or 2,000 things in there, if that. And they're all SVG, so they're all pretty tiny.
Doesn't Dan have the whole lot, though, surely?
Well, I mean, think about it. If each one's, say, 4K, and there's 2,000, there's only 8 megs. That's fuck all. So you might as well get the lot. Yeah. Why the hell would you want to get just a bit of it, or go and search it online if you can just snarf the entire library?
But if
there were 200,000 things of clip art in there, then it'd be a bit more of a problem. You'd want an online search return.
I mean, the real value in it is the fact that it's searching a live resource, so you can see new shit that's in there. I mean, but I think the key thing, I mean, I wrote part of the reason why I wanted to talk about this on today is because I wrote a blog entry about it today when I noticed this Rhythmbox support, and a guy left a valid comment on my blog saying, of course, you've got to remember about not only downloading content, but also uploading. So from things like Jacoshi, you should be able to easily shove music into Freesound or something like that, or Magnitude.
That'd be a good idea, yeah.
Into Magnitude.
And that's the thing. I mean, to me, it's like we've got a great operating system, but we need all of this shit's out there, it needs to be better integrated.
We talked about that a bit in the past with things like FSpot.
Yeah.
And FSpot can publish to Flickr, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, Flickr is a non-free web service, whatever. But for the moment, ignore that. But Flickr can, FSpot can
You heard
do
it
that.
Here first, people. Yeah. Flickr's a non-free web service, whatever.
Shut up. I'm 2007. I'm trying to illustrate a point without being a free software seller, you know, like everyone keeps telling me. But yeah, I mean, you've got the option of tools that manage this kind of thing. Do publish it, but tools that create stuff tend not to. So there's that. We don't have,
and the APIs are published, aren't they?
Yeah, we don't have upload to Freesound in Jacoshi or to Magnitude or Jamendo in Jacoshi, for example, and we probably should do.
But I think it's.
But you don't have a working Jacoshi.
Well, there is that as well. But we don't have publishing to stock photo sites from FSpot.
Right.
You know, you can publish to Flickr.
No, it doesn't need to be two-way, absolutely.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, the thing that's been interesting, I think, in the last couple of years is that we've changed from things like just looking at free software, and now you've seen a lot more sites like Wikipedia and like, you know, Jamendo and things like that. We've seen a lot more of that going on. So people are more open to the idea of free content as opposed to just free software.
It would invent a whole new level of spam. Like people would, like, I don't know, get your Viagra images and upload them.
No doubt about it.
It
would be a whole new way of uploading shite to us, wouldn't it?
Well, but you can do that anyway.
Yeah, but
I mean, spammers, if they want to write "get your Viagra here" on an image and upload it to Flickr, they can already do that.
Yeah,
having support in the GIMP is not going to change that. It's going to make it easier for the rest of us to do it. But spammers are always the first people to use new technology.
Incidentally, did you see? You know, like on the last show, we were talking about the future of GNOME
and David Murray coming and all that, and started talking about it, which is brilliant because that was the point of talking about it.
There was a big discussion on the IRC channel, which Shala posted me a link to. It's good to see there's some discussion that's going there. I'd like to see easy support for this kind of stuff built into GNOME or KDE. So application developers shouldn't have to jump through the same hoops to get this kind of support in there.
It'd be really good.
So where are we now with this kind of
format?
Not brilliantly.
Right, because I remember the open office support for getting stuff from the fucking clip art place, what it's called.
Open clip art.
I'm sure that was being talked about a year and a half ago. Yeah, that has not happened.
As far as I mean, it may have done, and I haven't seen it.
Or you saying they're lazy?
It's not with my version of open office.
Right. You're telling Michael Meeks
he's still got
lazy.
The fucking multicoloured donuts then.
But like I said, I mean, you can install open clip art, the package, and get a load of it, so then it's available.
Yeah, so it's let's see some of this happening. And obviously, listeners, if you know of any of this stuff, then do let us know.
Yeah, some way of tying things into getting fonts would be nice.
That would be good. Like, you know, like 1001freefonts.com or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah, there'd have to be 1001 actually properly freely licensed fonts.com.
Yeah.
Rather than just 1001 fonts we've robbed off other people's sites where they weren't very clear about the licensing.
I'd like to see access for, you know, commercial music and things like that. If you want to buy your Iron Maiden album, I'd like to see that kind of support.
But then you've got to have, you know, a commercial thing is prepared to let you do that, and there aren't that many of them.
Fucking precisely none, in fact.
You know, because everyone is either the iTunes music store, who are apparently not interested in cooperating with Rhythmbox, or they're selling WMV music that we can't fucking... WMA music with DRM on it that we can't play anyway.
So, ta-da,
there it is.
But isn't DRM a really bad idea now, according to Mr. Jobs?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking... credit to
they credit did it because the music industry told them to do it, right?
Beard.
Beard Linux.
I have maximum respect for Jobs. I mean, I know there's like cynical people saying...
You're running Mac OS X. Of course you are.
The way I see it is the guy basically said... You know, 5-10 years ago.
Was he wearing a black polo neck?
The guy goes.
Yes, he was.
The guy says, "Yeah, music labels. You know, if you want to come and, you know, we're going to create this thing called the iPod. We believe in digital music." And they said, "Well, we're not going to fucking do that because people can copy it." And he said, "Okay, we'll have this thing called DRM." And they were like, "Yeah, all right then. We like this idea of DRM."
You think he said that to them?
Well, they obviously said to them, "You're going to need if you want your music protecting, then we'll have to use DRM, right?" And they were like, "Okay, we'll feel comfortable about that because we've got DRM." And then gets them all on board. Now Apple are fucking controlling that space. Yeah. And says, DRM's bollocks.
Well, I mean, it depends. The opposite side of the coin is that he said, well, there are basically three ways to do this. You've got to have DRM or you could have no DRM. Or we could keep the DRM we've got and license it everywhere. And obviously, number three is not possible. We're not doing it. So just stop talking about licensing fair play to anybody. So the only options are DRM or no DRM. And clearly, we want no DRM. It was good that he stood up and said that. Absolutely.
Did you read his essay?
I did. About six times.
Once.
Did you not understand it the first time?
He's a bit thick.
I don't know if you've got a Firefox update.
Did you have to use your finger to follow the line?
I did, absolutely. So I thought it was important to actually read it carefully rather than just, you know, skip read it in my lunch hour.
The thing is, why has he decided to say no? Is it just because they've got the market share and we can go, fuck you, we're going to
My theory is that Jobs, in his heart of hearts, doesn't particularly like DRM and knew that he needed DRM to get some control in the industry.
I think he genuinely doesn't like it.
He's kind of going, fuck you. And it's like...
I just thought perhaps maybe... I fucking lost the thread again, sorry. I had a fucking glistening point to make there.
Maybe the fumes minutes. Are affecting your brain.
I'm speaking forcefully through a brown cloud.
A brown cloud of CH4, I think.
Yeah, listeners, if you can hear this whirring in the background, it's the extractor fan.
Strapped to Jono's ass.
Aids got wind tonight.
Fucking cheek.
Moving swiftly on.
I remember my point, sorry.
Your point is important to us.
I just thought maybe now is because people are the wider public are actually really becoming aware of what DRM is and what it means.
No, they're not.
And he thought maybe... Slowly
they are.
Do you reckon? I don't think they are.
People are starting now.
Most people on the street have no clue.
No, I agree with you, but the more advanced of ordinary people rather than geeks are now starting to run into things like the 3 iPod limit on, you know, or the 3 Mac limit on how many times you can move your music before you have to buy it all again and that sort of thing.
I think as well that there's no doubt Apple themselves are getting into the... sharing information between devices thing, because, you know, for example, they've got their new Apple TV thing, and you can wirelessly get content between that and your iPod, and then and then your Mac,
there was
and then your TV.
A post on Dig about that, and all it was pictures of the packaging. There's like 15 photos of the packaging, all taken really tastefully, and I'm
like porn photos.
Fuck's sake. The packaging.
Yeah, and you wouldn't do that with a fucking Cisco manual, would you?
They go in the bin.
But I mean, this is the thing. I mean, the way we fight against this kind of thing is precisely to, like you say, Jono, to get at all this stuff that's out there on the net.
Yeah.
The Creative Commons community or free culture community or whatever you want to call it is busy putting together.
No, it's an excellent idea.
Thank you.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, motherfucker.
Okay, we're talking to Becky Hogg from the Open Rights Group. Hello, Becky.
Hello.
So, tell us what you do and what ORG does.
Okay, so I run ORG, the Open Rights Group. It's a very young organisation, and basically the best way to introduce it is to say it's a bit like the British EFS.
We don't go around
doing impact litigation because Britain doesn't have a constitution. But what we do is we talk to the media, we talk to politicians, and we try and make them see another point of view on technology.
Excellent.
Ooh.
Right, presumably on digital rights rather than...
Yeah, basically, digital rights stuff, so intellectual property. We had a lot to do with the Gowers Review last year, and also privacy, security, that sort of stuff. Obviously, there are a lot of groups in the UK, people like No2ID and Leave Them Kids Alone, who concentrate on single issues.
Right.
And what we try and do is act as an umbrella organisation for digital rights in the UK.
Ah.
Cool. So it's been running since Open Tech last year, which was when?
So So we started, was it Open Text BBC Backstage? Or what used to be NotCon?
That's the one.
And there was a panel debate, which was, does Britain need a digital rights organisation? And everyone decided we sort of did. And one guy, I think it was Steve Coast, who now runs OpenStreetMap, said, well, I'll give £5 a month to this cause. Who's with me? And Danny O'Brien, who even then and certainly now works for the EFF in San Francisco. San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're correcting me here, actually. It is San Francisco. Yes, indeed. Danny O'Brien said, well, look, I'm going to set up a pledge on Pledge Bank. And 1,000 people said that they would do it, that they would donate £5 a month to run the ORG.
They
and
did
that's
indeed.
How we came into being.
Here we go.
And so we're completely grassroots funded, which is kind of cool because the atmosphere, the environs where we work, there are a lot of lobbying organisations. So I've just come back from doing an interview sitting next to a guy from the BPI. And, you know, we can say, hey, well, 1,000 people on the street said that they'd put in their pockets for us.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have to say, only 650 people actually did.
Really? Have you not, Jono Bacon? First two people to sign up for that pledge, me and Jonathan Edward James Bacon.
I was first.
I think you should get a special prize, actually, for being the first two. I wasn't involved in the organisation. I'm supporter at the beginning, and I'm supporter number 14. But are you guys, like... Org 001
Well, it ought to go like this. I'm probably Org 001.
No, you're not. You're number two.
Okay,
I'm number one.
I'm number two, but the difference between me and Jono is every month you get a fiver from me.
Hang on a second.
Hang on, Jonathan Bacon, defend yourself.
Oh, they're going to court
Joseph. No. Okay, I
want to
hear this.
Okay, yeah, admittedly, I haven't paid the fiver a month. In my defence, I pay £5 a month to the Canine Defence League.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, their rights need defending, don't they?
That's not going
to
help
you
talking to the cat lover.
You can't stretch another fiver a month for digital rights.
I might. Hang on. I wasn't expecting this to happen.
Do you know what a pledge is?
Let me give a quick plug for what we're doing in April, if that's all right.
Yes.
On April the 11th, we're having a sort of party, sort of event in London to try and persuade those 350 and potentially some more people to start supporting the ORG so that we can do even greater work. So if your listeners would like to come and find out more about us, we're having this party. It's in Bar Kick in Shoreditch. Kicks off about 8 p.m. and there's loads of fun stuff. There's
And what date is that?
It's the 11th of April.
Can we get a URL?
It's the Wednesday after Easter weekend.
And is there a web address people can look for more information about?
Yes, there is. It's support.org and party.eventbrite.org. Let me just check that. can I just check that URL? Hang on.
Yes, it's orgparty.org.
That's it. It's a bit like /.org. It's orgparty.org. It is. Okay, I'm bringing it to you now. It is. It's what I said. It's http://supportorgandparty.eventbrite. Which is eventbrite.com.
Cool.
We're using the Eventbrite interface to sign
up. Cool. Someone's going
to
take the last 5 seconds of conversation, make a drum and bass song.
Anyway, ask about actual ORG.
We're going to have public domain music, remix visuals,
excellent,
three culture goodie bags, and a very special guest speaker to be announced.
We should talk.
Fantastic.
We should talk to them about our lunchtime thing at Lug Radio Live. Sorry. Anyway, digression. So I should really pay my £5 a month, and I'll come down to that event.
I'd love to see you there.
So I will come down. So tell me what are you using this money for? I mean, you've got a number of these people have paid up. So what's the money actually going on? What are their fivers going on each month?
Okay, so right now, what the money goes towards is to pay for me to sit on the end of phones to talk to journalists, to try and talk some sense at them when they bring up issues. Like, for example, when Steve Jobs started talking about DRM and Apple iTunes, we got a lot of people coming to us saying, sure.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
It's a terrible idea. We can't not have DRM. And the ORG was there to say, actually, yeah, that would be a great thing. And this DRM is bad for X, Y, and Z reason, for example.
Yeah.
And we all know why DRM is bad. It's bad for the consumer. It sort of messes up with almost all free and open source software there is out there. And it's just a bit nasty. And so we managed to be a lot more eloquent than that when we're speaking to other journalists about DRM.
Cool.
and things like that. So A, it pays for us to be a sort of a media clearinghouse, and then B, it pays for us to run specific campaigns. Now, last year, we ran a campaign based around the Gowers Review and copyright term extension, and we were pretty successful there in that Andrew Gowers, who was doing a review for the government, commissioned an economic, because of all the noise we were making, commissioned a study into the economics of it all, and found out that actually, no, the music industry doesn't need an extra 5, 10, 20, 40
damn
years
right.
on
yeah. cool.
protection in sound recordings, and there's no economic argument for it. So we were quite pleased with that. Now, this year, we're concentrating on electronic voting. It's sort of quite fun looking at what's happening in the United States in terms of electronic voting and Diebold and all the sort of major...
Are you looking at that from a security point of view?
We're looking at that from a security point of view and also from an implementation point of view. But, yeah, we're coming with the sort of very unsexy but very true computer science argument that you cannot do this securely, even if... And this is the weird one, even if you open source the code, which they're nowhere nowhere near doing, by the way. It's all commercial confidentiality over
code. See, that's
code.
The problem.
It's all sort of trust us. These machines will work. Even in one case, I think someone wrote, one Diebold executive wrote and said, this will deliver you these machines will deliver you the election, trust us. So, you know, we laugh, but actually it's coming to the UK.
Let me just get this clear. You're saying that it can't work even if you had open source software?
That's certainly the opinion of a lot of experts in the area. Okay. There's a researcher called Joe Kearney who works now out of one of the universities in Dublin, and he is working on a piece of what they call remote voting software. But he will tell you that right now, and that's open source, I think it's called... KO2, as in KAO2, but I'll check that
right.
for you.
Okay.
But he says, and he actually, we ran an event in February where he came to speak, and he says even he would vote with a pen and paper. It's just not ready yet. It might be ready in, 10 years.
Yeah.
We don't know how the technology is
really?
Going to change.
Yeah. Okay, that's
but
interesting.
Right now it's not ready, and really the government, and I'm just learning this because I'm working with Org now for 2 months and obviously around them for longer as a
it's an interesting opinion.
Beforehand. But the government seemed to take a really weird view about technology. It's all about centralization for them. They don't seem to appreciate something
it's all about
which
overspending.
I think the open source software community appreciates very well, that actually technology works best when it's decentralized, when it's coming from the bottom up, not from the top down. But they're decommissioning centralized IT project after centralized IT project, and it's all blowing up in their faces.
Yeah.
And it's just a very different point of view about technology than I think the people that support Org have. So I go around sort of hawking that point of view. Does that make sense, or am I sort of talking weird?
Sounds great.
I was just wondering, you'll have to forgive me, I don't know a great deal about the Open Rights Group, but I was just wondering if you could tell me who your audience is and who you speak to exactly. Because in a sense, conceivably, there could be a case where you're actually preaching to the converted, so I wondered who you're actually talking to. Do you speak to the governments? Do you speak to other open rights groups?
Elvis impersonators.
Or Elvis impersonators. what is your audience to promote your beliefs?
I think it's fair to say that we are trying to speak to the mainstream.
Right.
So, although most of our supporters come from the ranks of the converted, obviously, otherwise they wouldn't support us, what we're trying to do is we're trying to take that view to a wider audience.
Sure.
Now, a lot of the time we get quoted in the Register or quoted in ZDNet, and in a way, there we are still talking to the technology community. It's when we get calls from the International Herald Tribune, which has happened, or from The Guardian, or even from the Sunday Times and BBC Radio, that's when I think that we're really doing a good job in promoting these views. We're not. I'd hate to think that all we were doing was preaching to the converted.
Sure.
I think over our very, very young history, it's not even 2 years yet, we've got a lot of exposure in the mainstream press. And we are talking to politicians as well. And in fact, once you know, there are quite a few, they are the minority, but there are some tech-savvy members of parliament out there, and we're talking to them, and we're trying to help put a more tech-savvy angle out there. So the mainstream is our audience, and not the converted. At least I'd hope so, anyway.
Corinne, that's interesting, because occasionally over the last couple of years, I've found myself thinking, hang on, I'm paying a five a month and I haven't seen much out of them, but that's because I'm not supposed to. You know, presumably that's the point. So, do you want to tell us, apart from turning up at the 11th, what people need to do if they want to get involved with ORG? What can we do to help?
Okay, great. Well, there's a couple of mailing lists on the website. So the website is openrightsgroup.org. Unfortunately, org.org had already gone. So openrightsgroup.org. And there's a couple of mailing lists. If you just want to know what we're up to, sign up to Org Announce. If you want to start discussing what we should be taking out to the mainstream, sign up to Org Discuss. If you are we're really interested in finding technically minded people, so coders, but also graphic designers. We desperately need graphic designers at the moment to help us on our campaign. So if you're that, please email Michael at openrightsgroup.org. I was about to spell Michael for your listeners, but I'm sure they know. and really, if you have any skill that you think could help us, we basically go around talking about technology issues. So if you can write good copy, if you can code good websites, if you can design good design stuff and you'd like to help out, please offer us your skills. If you're too busy and you'd like us to do the work for you, please think about donating £5 a month to us. That's openrightsgroup.org/support. And right at the moment, we're looking for people to go on our electronic voting missions. We're sending 11 observation missions around the country to try and look for jiggery-pokery in the remote e-voting pilots and in the telephone e-voting pilots and in the electronic polling booth e-voting pilots that are going on.
Cool. Okay. I understand that they're doing electronic voting in Tahiti, so we'd like to volunteer that we go and help out on ORG's dime, if you like.
And then we'll go for Hawaii. If you prefer, we could send you to Estonia. Though.
Yeah, that sounds wicked.
Estonia's
right, really?
It's a good party city.
Excellent. Estonia's right, apparently, so we'll go there. Italian. Right, okay. The only other thing that we need to mention is if you want to hear more from Becky, listeners, and Becky doesn't know this either, she'll be speaking at Lung Radio Live this year.
Oh, wicked. Excellent.
On the good stage.
on the good stage.
Not the shit stage.
A bad stage.
So, yes, you'll be able to hear more from Becky there. Thank you very much for talking to us, Becky.
Thanks, Becky.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Best luck with it all. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Bye.
So, Adam, you've got three bollocks then.
No, that's eight. as Amity demonstrated in your front room, in fact.
Yeah.
That's not going to sound right to listeners, is it? right. Do you know when you meet people who have heard of Linux, they know of it loosely, but never used it? They always say, yeah, I've heard of Linux. It's faster than Windows. It's more secure.
Not anymore.
And it's more stable.
And I've never used it.
Before. Yeah, I mean, that's what people think. That's what we've been saying for
years. It used to
be
way faster, didn't it? Not anymore.
And that was what...
When there was no graphical interface.
And that was what we all used to say. No, that's not fair. That was a graphical interface.
There was a graphical interface.
FEWM.
FEWM, whatever.
No, that's not true.
FEWM... 95.
No, that was next gen version.
But we spent ages going, yeah, it's faster and it's more secure and it's more stable and everything. And now everyone started to finally believe it isn't anymore.
It's certainly not faster. I think it's still more secure and it's still quite stable, depending on what...
I would say it's not particularly stable. I see kernel dumps reasonably often.
It's because you're not running CentOS, mate.
Well... We're not having that debate. I'm not running CentOS. I don't believe that is the reason at all. But I've got, 50 Linux servers at work, and I see kernel panics every couple of weeks. I see Apache crap out and die under no particular load. So I was wondering,
that's really worrying. Have you not got a shit sysadmin or something? I haven't seen a kernel panic in years.
I'm the sysadmin. But
really?
No, I mean, they're not. I mean, what we were talking about before, outside of the show, is that maybe you see it happen when there's not enough RAM and you've got too many processes being allowed to be spawned by Apache and all that. But we're not short of RAM at all.
No, exactly. So you're getting genuine stability failures, not just misconfiguration like me and Jono get.
The question is, how do we pimp it?
Well, I was going to say, the other thing you've got to bear in mind, of course, is that Linux means different things to different people. So someone running an Ubuntu system is going to be different to a Fedora system, to a Gentoo system, to a Debian system.
And the bigger distinction is not just that. It's Linux means a different thing to Adam and Aid than it does to me and Jono, because we're thinking kind of desktop-y. And you're, you know, you're saying, oh, I get kernel panic from Apache or whatever, and we've got 50 servers, and I tend to think of it as a desktop operating system. I
don't think it's easy. It's necessarily easy to say it's slower in all scenarios, you know, because in many situations it is.
But he's talking about end users.
Hold on. Well, I mean,
what kind of end users?
The people who walk up to you in the street, end users, no, people who have desktops.
Yeah, but are they going to be running servers? Are they going to be running desktops?
No, the end users don't run servers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about, from my point of view, I'm talking about...
consumers.
I'm seeing the server end, but you know, your average Joe Schmo who walks up to you, yeah, I've heard of Linux, yeah, it's faster, isn't it? It's more secure. And, I mean, I don't see any particular underlying stability problems as a desktop user. I don't see the kernel crapping out as I do on some servers. But I was just, what I was wanting to get at really is... that doesn't really seem to be the case. I mean, I don't find Linux particularly slow. In fact, running GNOME, I find it faster than running Windows XP.
I don't agree with you, but
I don't find it particularly slow, but I certainly wouldn't say it's as fast as everybody seems to think it is.
But it's interesting because, I mean, when I was an advocate, and we used to have people come into OpenAdvantage and they used to say, you know, we're interested in Linux for these reasons. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember anyone saying it's because it was faster.
It used to be.
It did used to be, but I think, but that was like 1998.
Well, that's because it did, you know, a third as much stuff.
Exactly.
Well, so did Windows 98 at the time.
No, it did a third as much stuff as Windows 98. No, it did a third as much stuff as now.
Yeah.
Right.
If you look at it, you say, it was a lot faster. You say, okay, fine, but you had to configure all of your individual applications to know what your web browser was, for example, so the operating system wasn't handling that. So there was a load of that kind of thing built into Windows that wasn't built into Linux at that point.
And back
so
then
it got to be faster because a lot less infrastructure. As we've started to build up the infrastructure, we've lost the speed advantage. I don't see Linux as being significantly faster than Windows.
It really isn't. It's
I mean, back then, of course, you didn't have things like HAL and you didn't have things like Cairo and that kind of stuff, which we've got now as part of the desktop.
I mean, you had this discussion on the show long ago, whereas Windows people have spent maybe a decade now, maybe more, optimizing their whole performance stack so things stop. I mean, doesn't the fucking GUI run in kernel mode or something stupid like that to make it more responsive?
I believe so.
And that's why Windows 98 used to go
I don't think it's
fast.
Just to make it more responsive, but yeah.
Yeah,
it's an interesting question. If someone came up to you and said, why should I use Linux now? What would the reasons you give them be?
There's lots of reasons, isn't
there? What would they be?
As can be demonstrated at CBIT.
If you can boil it down to maybe three or four things, like, I know, like two legs good, four legs good, two legs bad, that kind of thing, that your average person that knows of Linux but has never used it.
Because that was the point. So why should you use Linux? You say, because it's faster and because it's more stable.
I'd say the first question when someone comes up and says, why should I use Linux, is say, what do you want to use it for? Because it's different things for different people. I mean, again, even if you're talking about end users, you're going to have some people who want to run it in an office, some people who want to run it at home. Like, if someone comes up and they want to run games on it, then there's a whole different...
or view any kind of media on it.
Yeah, there's a whole different ball game there than somebody who wants to run an office suite. And, of course, in an office, you can say to them, your big thing, particularly for people who are running, like, little computers in offices, like small SME sort of things, of course, is that there's no viruses.
I think that's probably
that's a big thing.
Security thing,
and we tend to forget about a lot of that stuff because we take it for granted. And but you know, I mean, the thing I've discovered. I mean, again, like I was at CBIT at the weekend with the Ubuntu stand, and of course, people were coming up. And the thing that surprised me was the amount of people who are just using Linux. I mean, we weren't in the Linux part; we were in a separate bit of CBIT. So why
weren't you in the Linux part?
Because we did Linux shows all the time.
I hate free software.
We do Linux shows all the time, and the Ubuntu German team were in the Linux park.
Right,
but it's good to get out of that and see a different type of user and see more regular people. And it was interesting, the amount of people who walked past, paying no interest to the booth, and we'd say to them, you know, what are you using? They say, well, we're using Ubuntu. It's just part of fucking furniture.
These are people at CBIT.
Yeah.
Germany's very big into
Linux.
This is not John Q public, but nonetheless, they're more public than the sort of people you'd find in the Linux bit.
I'd say they're as generically public as someone who goes to a computer fair. I mean, they're technology enthusiasts. They're not Linux people.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Because CBIT's a generic show. But
moving away from CBIT, back to Adam's question.
But no, the point I was going to make was that, you know, these people were coming up to the booth and they were asking... people who weren't familiar with Ubuntu or Linux were asking, why should we use it? And of course, you don't know whether that question is based around, I'm familiar with the Linux, because a lot of people would use SUSE or Red Hat or whatever, and they wanted to know why Ubuntu's special. And then, of course, you don't know whether the question is, why should I use Linux in general?
Right.
And then, of course, that's you know, there's all the freedom aspects that you need to get over to them so they can understand.
Yeah, I mean, that's my answer. That's always been my answer, because it's free software and explain about freedom. But I'm, you know,
you've got to get them
one track mind with this. Yeah, and it's been brought home
to
me
repeatedly,
saying that pushing it from freedom's point of view is what RMS has been doing for 20 years and he hasn't got anywhere.
And 95% of people, general computer users, don't give a shit.
Exactly, which is why I'm trying to stop doing that. But then your question is, what do you say?
Sorry to interrupt. I mean, but they do care about speed. They do care about security, we like to think. And they do care about stability, which, I mean, coming from Windows background, most people know Windows ain't always that stable. So, I mean,
20 years ago, maybe.
I think, well, I mean,
think it's not stable
I'm
now?
Talking Windows 98 here. Right, that's always my archetypal Windows operating system that just crashes like fuck. So, I mean, boiling it down for people to three or four things. I mean, I think the virus problem is a really good one.
No viruses is
and
a good one.
One of the ones that I've been mentioning to people recently is basically that you get something like Windows Update for every single piece of software on your desktop.
That was the other one I was going to say. You get updates for free forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I'd come at it, the cost option. So, you know, how much is Vista? If you want all the features on it, you know, it's a couple of hundred quid. And how much is your operating system?
And then how much are you going to... I mean, again, people aren't... There aren't that many people who are going to go out and buy boxed Vista. They're going to buy... The next computer they buy will have Vista on it, so they don't see that cost.
The only problem is we're not going to
They'll see the cost for Norton Antivirus or McAfee or Sophos or whatever.
I suppose, yeah.
You know, that's another 25 quid or whatever.
But when
whatever,
you talk to cost back to most people on the street, they're just like, but Windows is free.
Yeah. I think the thing
it's the ancillary stuff. And the fact that you get updates for everything, so it's all up to date. And people seem to... When I talk to people, they seem to be more impressed by the idea that everything gets upgraded every 6 months. Whereas if you said... you've talked about in the past, why don't we just have a rolling upgrade all the time? People don't seem to be as impressed by that as the idea that you get a new operating system every 6 months.
But that massively depends on the kind of user.
I'm talking about just...
You don't, do you? You don't get a new operating system every month.
No, you don't. No, but you can tell people it's like going from Windows 2000 to Windows XP.
No, it isn't. It's like from Windows 2000 Service Pack 1 to Windows 2000 Service Pack 2.
No, it's not, because all the people don't know what a Service Pack is. Service packs don't bring in features. The whole point of a service pack is that it doesn't bring in features.
Dapper and hoary. No,
I see the point. To me, it'd be more like going from 98 to ME.
Yeah. 95 to 98, 98 to ME.
Looks a bit prettier, a few more features.
Yeah.
It's not a ground-shaking change.
The sort of people I talk to don't remember 98 and ME. They don't remember what it was like to go from 95 to 98. Because they weren't doing that. You know, they bought a computer and it probably ran Windows 95, and then 3 or 4 years later they bought another computer and it either ran ME or 2000 or XP.
I think the thing
that was it. So they saw a huge change there.
I think the thing as well with advocacy is it's the subtle things that we do tend to forget, like the virus thing that often a real pull for people. Like, for example, I mean, again, at CeBIT, something I discovered a lot of people like is the fact that, speaking just of Ubuntu, I know it's the same with other distros, is that you get a complete system. So you get an Office suite and you get an email client and all the rest of it on one CD. You know, and a lot of people like that. And importantly, that it's a bootable CD, so they can boot it.
Windows comes on one CD.
Yeah, I know.
No, but it doesn't have an email client. Well, it does. Gotcha. It's got Windows Express and used to have Outlook Express.
But the point I'm making is that you get this complete system for a typical productivity user, and of course you tell them of the fact that you can install stuff with generally one or two clicks, and the fact that it's a live CD means that people can play with it, and if they like it, then they can install it, and they can do all that with one CD. And a lot of people like that.
Yeah,
and I think that
that's good in the world we're in at the moment, where people have to take away a CD and do the installation. Ideally, we'd be in a world where you'd say, why should I use Linux? And you explain various reasons, and they say, how should I use Linux? And you say, go and buy a gateway computer, or whoever.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's an entirely different question.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But I mean, the one thing I was going to say is, I don't think people really give a shit that much about... desktop users don't really give that much of a shit about speed now, and to a point, stability. Stability and security. But speed, I don't think it's that much of an issue, because basically computers are so cheap that if they think something's slow, they don't blame the operating system, they blame the computer.
The thing is, I think people like to think that their PC is running faster. Oh, yeah, my I've got fucking XP plus this bit that makes it run a little bit faster. You know,
people are so used to slow computers.
People have got all those shitty utilities, though, that they love. This makes it that little bit faster.
People have become inured to computers being slow. It makes me sad. sometimes. It really does. That people think it is normal that you click an application and it takes 10 seconds to start up.
Yeah,
people think
it's normal. Yeah, but I haven't installed my operating system for 12 months. And you're like, what?
Yeah, people
shouldn't
think
you have to reinstall your operating system to make it quick again.
The web's just as bad. People think it's normal that you click on a link and it takes 10, 15, 20 seconds for it to appear. Yeah. All that kind of thing.
I
want to shy away a bit from the desktop.
That's why you shouldn't play with drumsticks,
We talk about the desktop all the time. Now, this is mainly for you two, then. If someone came to you and said, why would you want to use Linux on the server? What answers would you give them? Why would you say that it's good on the server?
See, on the server, I would totally say performance, because you can do without X, and you've got such a gain in resources back then, and you can demonstrate absolutely a gain in performance on a server.
But you say you can do without X, but if you're targeting Windows sysadmins, then they're going to be fucked without X, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so they wouldn't use it. So you don't get any benefit. I mean, for Unix sysadmins, definitely, but...
I don't know. I think Unix as a server is a mindset. Well, I mean, again, much like the desktop. The desktop paradigm is pretty similar for whatever you're using. But I think a server is a particular mindset. You couldn't take a Windows... You can take a Unix sysadmin and put him on a Windows server, maybe, but I don't think you could take a Windows sysadmin and put him on a Linux server.
A Unix sysadmin is not going to be convinced by the performance argument, because anyone who's currently a Unix sysadmin is using it on some horrifically massive Sun machine with 85 processors in it or something.
That was me dropping that drumstick.
You know, a Unix sysadmin currently is not going to be using it on small x86-ish computers. Unless he's already a Linux happens to be using Solaris x86, which is not much. He's going to be coming from a big HP server or something like that.
Well, I wasn't talking about Unix in that sense. I think I was talking about Linux servers, maybe a 1U unit, maybe a Pentium Fast Bench 4 or a Xeon server.
So if someone came up to you and said, why should I use Linux in my server farm? Why should I use it for that? What would you say?
Because you get far more performance out of your server than you would on a Windows machine.
Performance is security, definitely.
But surely the big thing as well with Linux and in the server room is going to be things like support and the cost of support and things like that.
Well, I don't know.
Not
I mean,
so much.
Well, if you think...
Really? Surely Windows support organisations are competitive. It can't be cheaper to support Linux.
I'd have thought it'd be more expensive.
That's what I'm saying, not so much.
Exactly, that's what I mean. So that's worse.
Define what you mean by support.
No, I'm saying not. Yeah, I mean what I'm saying. I'm not saying necessarily that this is a benefit or a disadvantage. I'm just saying that surely a fact that we need to consider is going to be support in the server room.
Also,
like technical support.
Oh yeah, no.
I don't need technical support.
Yeah,
technical support.
That's a good point, because nobody buys software technical support. You buy hardware support.
Nobody buys.
I've never worked anywhere that
some people do.
Not for service. A lot of people do.
Not for service. You have your server team.
Not for the operating system on servers. They do for third-party packages.
No.
But an awful lot of places don't buy Windows support.
You buy hardware support for your servers and that's it.
Right, and then you have your sysadmins. And then you have sysadmins, what you're paying them for.
That's right.
Well, yeah, that's what I think.
So is it just before... I mean, one of the things that I find using the couple of Linux servers that we've got at work is that... It's a lot easier to install software on them. You can just go, oh, I need Apache, I need PHP, and I need MySQL, and bang, there it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a lot more fiddly on Windows. Even if you're using...
All the CDs and stuff,
Even if you've got all the CDs and you're trying to install SQL Server and IIS and whatever...
No, it really is,
it's still a lot more of a faff, and that's a nice benefit. You install stuff, it works as soon as you install
that's
it.
Not installing but it's not quite that simple, is it? I mean, it depends on how you install it. I mean, if you install... If you install on a Linux system, let's say using Debian, and you install Apache, PHP, MySQL, it's still fucking configuration nightmare if you're new to it. I mean, for things like
well, sysadmin wouldn't be new to it though, would they?
For things, it depends. If you're bringing someone over from the Windows world to the Linux world, not only they've got to grapple with the fact that it's a different operating system, but they've also installing that shit's going to be difficult. I mean, things like I know that Ubuntu server does it. I'm sure Fedora server does it, where you can set up a pre-installed system. There's like sort of types of system you can install, and then you've got things like XAMPP and SpikeSource and things like that, but I'm assuming that a server wouldn't run on XAMPP. I'm sure most sysadmins would have a fucking issue with that.
I don't know, but is that it? Is it just performance? Is that all sysadmins would care about? The only reason you convince people to move to Linux is performance.
Yeah, I think so.
Performance?
No, I think the core services are pretty stable as well. I certainly would rather run Apache than IIS, and I would certainly rather run, say,
but is that XIM. Is that from a security point of view? I mean, are you talking that you'd much rather put Linux in a DMZ rather than Windows in a DMZ? Because that's the way I feel.
We don't host Windows machines at
exactly.
all.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
I just don't. I just wouldn't want a Windows machine.
Right. So, so it's not just performance. It's is that stability or security?
That's security. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, surely stability is going to be. I mean, surely the Windows Linux system is more stable than Windows.
Well,
Windows.
I would have thought so. But Windows has kernel panics every day. Apparently.
No, not every day. I mean, every couple of weeks. I'll go.
Surely something is.
I can hand on my heart say since Windows 2000, they don't have a problem with stability.
Right.
I'd say. I mean, stability wise, I would have thought Windows servers are pretty bulletproof these days. I think they're leaky pieces of shit on the security side, but I imagine they're pretty bulletproof on stability.
I agree totally, yeah.
Interesting.
So given that it's not faster on the desktop, it's only really faster on the server, and that's probably not the target audience that you were thinking about, Adam, how do you sell it?
Well, I mean, I think these days we're actually closer now to seeing a tidal wave of Linux usage all around the world than we have ever been before. But
we are seeing more big deployments.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more as well, and we're getting ever closer to seeing Linux desktops being sold by mainstream manufacturers, but I don't think we've got anything quite as soundbite worthy as saying, yeah, it's more secure, it's faster, and it's more stable.
It's become much more.
I can only think of the cost option.
A discussion point. It's which is what O'Bacon was saying a few minutes ago. When someone comes in and says, why do you want to use Linux? You now can't say, because of these reasons. Yeah. It doesn't matter why you're using it. It's
still
always
free.
Faster. And it is still free.
It's still
all the
free
time. But now you've got to
in
say,
both meanings
why
of the word.
Are you using it? Let's have a discussion but about it. Yeah, and your answer might be, you're probably best not to use Linux.
But I think
that is my answer.
I think the thing is that there's so many reasons, there's so many benefits to using Linux, but the thing is there's no one single distinctive benefit. Like if Windows was inherently insecure and Linux was inherently far more secure, then you could just say security and people would be won over
on that one fact alone.
I
think you can still argue that case.
No, but what I was going to say is that there's so many benefits. Like there is the no viruses issue, there is the single seal issue. A lot of these are very tiny issues.
There's the no virus issue at the moment.
No, yeah, and all we can talk about is at the moment. Because we don't know what's going to be like in the next 5 years. The single issue might appear. But the thing is, you can't get all of that across. It's like when someone comes up to your stand, you know, again, using CBIT as an example, you've basically got 2 minutes to sell it to them, and you can't do that because there's so much. In my mind, one problem that we've got is that most people in the Linux world focus on one thing or the other. They either focus only on ethics or they only focus on technology, and they don't combine the two.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's wrong to just say to people, you know, technically it's brilliant because this, that, and the other, and to ignore the fact that it's free and free software and the community.
You should
side.
Always come back to that.
But then to just talk about community and the free software side is insane as well. And we need to have a good balance of the two.
So you can't sum it up quickly then?
I think it's impossible.
It now has to be a discourse, has to be a discussion.
Right, the best thing we've got in my mind is live CDs, because people can try it. And if they like it, they can click a button and install it. And most of the distros have live CDs.
Desktop people can.
Desktop people, yeah. But that's the end user that Adam was talking about.
Yeah.
I think you can also say that A, it's free, and B,
the cost thing, yes,
it's free. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you can pretty much do straight from the live CD almost everything you can do anywhere else. It's just the vertical markets that you can't do.
From the live CD, however, they're not going to get an impression of it being anywhere near faster. In fact, they're going to get an impression of it being
But they're not going to get any impression at all without the live CD, because no one's going to install it.
Exactly. And for desktop users, like I say, most people don't seem to give that much of a shit about performance.
Well, when something's running from a live CD, it's painfully slow.
That's
and
true.
If that's the first impression they get of Linux, they're going
to
come near
no,
it.
No, but that's why I think it's important to say, just it's running from the CD, and remember it's running from the CD, it will be a lot slower. If you want to try out and find out what the full speed is, install it on the system.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've got to prep people to make sure that they don't get the wrong impressions.
Are we talking about setting expectations?
Setting expectations.
Yeah, exactly what we're talking about. Specific, measurable.
Incidentally, Mr. Sweet, did you say fucking vertical markets?
Yeah, sorry.
I don't know what you're laughing about. He talked at Bacon.
Fucking talked
about consuming web content earlier today, so I had to stab him.
I should be talking about Web 20, shouldn't I?
Yeah, fucking Web 20.
What I meant is just those narrow parts
that are very vertical.
Little markets that where you need your business software that not everybody needs, but they are critical if you're going to take over the world.
You're basically referring to vertical markets.
You are. It's a long description around the phrase vertical markets. Yeah. We're just trying to avoid because it's business speak. But yeah, so there is no one, what do they call it? A unique selling point.
Or so is there? Why don't you write in and tell us?
The unique selling point, the only one we've got is it's free.
I think the stupid thing is,
and not to be underestimated,
I like it's free software
and that's not
as
unique,
well.
That's not a unique selling point in a lot of countries as well. Like in Russia.
Yeah. Windows is free in a lot of countries.
Exactly. It's free software is a unique selling point, but it's not necessarily... It's unique and it's a point, but it's not necessarily selling. I think it's your point.
Yeah, because that clarified it a whole bunch, didn't it?
So, however, before the fucking zealots attack me, I want to make it clear that I do think it's a very, very unique selling point. I just don't think it's the only point.
Right.
So, yeah. Right, like Aid says, write in and tell us. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah. Ah, you've only just pressed record.
Okay, you ready?
There's no comedy in this segment, apparently. I haven't even started the fucking segment yet. Okay, game face on, people. Suck in your guts, guys, we're the Ghostbusters.
Put your gay face on, did you say?
Game.
Oh, right.
Yeah, game homo.
Okay, I was the only thought I was the only one that didn't do it then as well.
Do what?
Put your gay faces on.
Oh, right.
Fuck off.
Adam and his prosthetic rapist eyebrows.
They're not just rapist eyebrows, they're prosthetic.
The Chris Waddle eyebrows.
That's right, that I've just had a stroke, rapist eyebrows.
Well, he is an old man.
Incidentally,
your vein throbbing there, can't you?
Incidentally, this is going in the show.
Oh dear.
So you best introduce the segment.
Is that silence for the edit?
There's going to be no edit.
Well, combination of two things. It was a silence for the edit, and then it was a silence so I can think about how to introduce the fucking thing.
But it's your segment.
I know. But I
and it. I'd just like to reiterate, the segment is actually going now.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. You'll be surprised. Your segment is important.
So, anyway, Linux.
Shut up. I'm trying to think about how to introduce it. Imagine you could go back in time.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't it just? 88 mile an hour.
What kind of device would you require?
Is it 1.2 gigaflops?
1.21 gigawatts.
1.21
gigawatts.
What the flux capacitor?
1.21 Cocoa Pops. What the hell is a gigawatt? Anyway,
flux
if we get fucking flux capacitor, if we can get back to the point, imagine your goal is to make Linux more successful than it is. If you could go back in time...
Oh, well, that would be really difficult.
Fucking 5 users instead of 4.
Significantly more successful than it is the point. So you can go back in time and change something to make it happen. Is there anything you could change? Or is, you know, as the way history played out,
I think
is that basically the way it was bound to happen?
Could we do fair things or unfair things?
You can go back and do unfair things if you think it's reasonable to do something unfair to bolster the popularity of an ethically sound operating system.
Could we undo the doing of unfair things that have worked?
So if you can do it rationally, you can't say, oh, we'll go back in time and make everyone like Linux, because you've got no plan for how to actually make that happen.
No, but if you could expose all the shady Microsoft dealings that happened ages ago that they're only just going into court for now.
If you think
you could expose that back in time.
If you think that would work, if you think you went back and they did it in 1995 and you exposed it in 1995, they probably still wouldn't get to court till 2002.
I go back in time and make it come to court quicker.
And now you see that you can't do, because
why?
How would you make that happen?
Well, how would I travel back in fucking time?
Well, for God's sake, a certain amount of suspension of disbelief here wouldn't hurt. For God's sake. But do you think ignore going back in time. Do you think there's anything that the Linux community, people using Linux, people using free software, do you think there's anything we could have done differently in the past? Something that we should have done differently and didn't?
Concentrate in one distro.
Don't worry about DeLoreans, if you like.
I like the fact that there's loads of different flavours of distros and...
Yeah, but I think we'd get more people on board if... actually, no, I take that back. No, I'm full of shit.
What would that distro be, Mr. Bacon? Let me think.
Gentoo. No, I take that back,
said
actually.
One man in a shed cheer.
Tiny's over going next to me throwing stones over the fence.
The thing is, what you actually said, that may actually have worked out in our benefit in terms of market... penetration.
Yeah,
Adam,
what have you been doing recently?
The thing is, it was
and synergy. No, I think concentrating on fewer distros would mean that we'd be more together.
So we should have just stayed with the original one, which is Red Hat, then.
Yggdrasil. Maybe it would have been Redhat.
So really,
Yggdrasil was before that. Yeah,
everybody else. The original one.
Slackware was before Redhat as well, I think.
Actually MCC.
MCC was.
MC Hammer Linux.
MC Hammer Linux.
MC Hammer Linux. You could have massive, massive trousers.
Yeah. You have to.
You can't touch this.
You can't install.
No, you can touch this. That's super the.
Can't compile.
I mean, the only other thing I can think of is perhaps hiring Microsoft's fucking marketing team before they did, but that's.
No, marketeers are when they were in school. Aren't
they? Yeah. I could go around in my licky
fleece. This is the point. Do you think there's anything that could have, should have, would have been done differently?
I thought we were just coming up with those ideas.
Well, yeah. But go on then.
This is what we've already come up with. We don't really fucking know what we're talking about.
We've already come up with a couple.
Well, the thing is, really, I'm quite happy with the way it's panned out. The only thing I'd like to say, but I guess this is the whole point of the segment, is that I would like it to have happened faster. Because I see the future as being quite positive. I think we're heading towards seeing a real build-up.
You see the future?
Yeah. Should it? Well, yeah. We're going back into the past, so I mean, I can see the future.
Ah.
Looking into your crystal ball.
I see free people.
I mean, the thing is, in my mind, there's the thing that I'd like to have changed is putting better people in the same positions that have happened in history. I think there's been things that have been fucked up by idiots. By people, for example, companies...
Like what?
Like who?
Like, for example, companies who've we've seen so many companies who start out with the open source ethos, right? And they're founded by people who understand it, and then they get some VC funding, and then they get a load of, they get a business team that comes in who don't really understand what's what, and then they fail, and they have some issues.
Who? I mean, I can think of Ars Digita, Phil Greenspan's company, but who else was there?
A bunch of them. I mean, I'd say...
I mean, names, I'm serious, I don't
Caldera.
Know.
I'd say Caldera are an example of such a thing, and to a point, Redhat. But Redhat have kind of changed things for the better now. I'd say.
What did Redhat do wrong?
No, I think that they've
nobody had heard of Linux.
They fucked up a number of OEM agreements with fucking people
and employed Eric Raymond.
No, I think that not every company, but I think a reasonable proportion of companies. Another good example is IBM. You know, when they started the open source thing, they ignored the community largely, and they fucked a lot of relations up. And then
the next question is what would you do if you went back in time?
Yeah, what I'd do is I'd employ better people. I'd make sure that these people who fucked up these positions, they got different people.
So when you say IBM ignored the community, do you think that if someone more convincing had been in that meeting room at that time and said, you need to not ignore the community, do you think they'd have listened?
Yes.
You do?
I think it's...
So you think it was a failure on the part of the community to advocate themselves
I think
a failure of people in IBM to have vision or
I think it's a combination of... I think it's a failure...
It's
I think,
a vision.
I think it was
now.
A failure of... a failure of not making community something that these businesses needed to really pay attention to, which they didn't. I think that was a failure in getting that message across to them. And also, like I say, a lot of these companies just hired traditional business people who didn't really understand the ethos behind open source and fucked a lot of this stuff up. So I'm saying if they got better people in... Now, today, it's different. It's today, like companies today, people realise that you've got to have people who understand the ethos, otherwise you will have the same mistakes that people were making 3-4 years ago. So it's different. I mean, it's much easier for a company like Canonical than it was for, let's say, Redhat back then, because, of course, it was all new, much newer back then.
I think I quite agree with you there, really. I mean, I didn't know about Redhat screwing up some OEM deals, but one of my points I was going to bring to the table was that I think targeting OEM PC manufacturers would have been quite useful.
They were targeted, but they just... They weren't allowed were they? It was a shaky...
Not necessarily. Well, some OEM contracts were fucked up by a distro. Well, I'm not saying just Redhat.
Possibly.
I've heard about problems with Redhat. And I'm sure loads of other distros have had the same problems.
And part of the issue there, conceivably some OEM contracts were fucked up. But imagine...
But didn't Microsoft fuck them all up?
Well, no, sort of. Whether Microsoft banned everyone from taking stuff is still under debate. But imagine that you could go back to 1993... and say to people, okay, don't put Windows in your machines, put Linux on it. Would it have helped? Because they sold loads and loads of PCs with Windows 3.1 and 3.11 for workgroups and then Windows 95 on it because ordinary people could use them. If you'd have put Linux on point, would it have helped? Would they have sold any PCs?
I'd go back in time to the point where they started using Microsoft Windows in schools. And I'd have been in that meeting room and I'd have changed that decision.
Wouldn't have made a difference.
Would.
Because at the point when they started using Windows in schools, it was already in the industry. Because before that, everyone was using Acorns in schools.
Yeah.
Until RM got there.
Linux was not in any way comparable. It was a kernel.
Yeah. Acorn had a fantastic operating system. It wasn't free. wasn't free software, but they had a fantastic operating system. They went, we're just going to concentrate on the education market. We're not going to be able to sell it out of that. And then they died. Morons.
Mm.
I
take your point. That wouldn't have made any difference.
I think the problem divides into two things is whether you think that the community's made some mistakes. And I think largely the community has pretty much done broadly the right thing. I think, you know, obviously some people are full of shit and some people are full of good ideas, but broadly the community's done the right thing. In my mind, where mistakes have been made in the past is where the industry's taken hold of Linux, and they're the people who are pushing it out to end users in many situations. Community people, really, advocacies is much less impactive when it comes from the community. It's marketing departments in these big companies.
But surely that's a failure of... at least partially a failure of the community to adequately explain.
No, but the thing is, though, is the guidelines for this segment are the fact that these have got to be things that are actually doable. And yes, we could say, yeah, the community should have done that better, but it's not, that just wouldn't have happened.
Right, no, okay. I mean,
whereas marketing departments who are good at marketing but don't really understand the ethos and the message behind free software, they have failed in my mind.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, when I first thought of this, my immediate thought was I'd take,
big gun.
I'd take an Ubuntu CD or I'd take a Fedora Core CD and I go back to 1995.
I'm sure you thought the second.
With all the sources on it and say, there you go, wouldn't this be good? And then I thought, no, hang on, it's not going to be any good because it's all supporting hardware that no one's got and CD drives that no one can use and RAM that no one's got. I mean, if you went back to 1995 and said to people, look, here is Fedora Core 5, they'd look at it and go, what's this HAL thing? Well, that looks quite good. Blimey, it needs 256 megabytes of RAM. My hard disk isn't that big.
I mean, I think one of the things that would be quite nice...
Would it help? I mean, obviously you could look at the code and how it worked and see some things, but would you have to look at it and go, well, that would be useful if I had a machine with all the RAM that currently exists in the world in my one desktop computer? You know, would it
and
actually
could you
help?
Install it in pairs as well?
Well, I was going to say,
it might have helped from the point of view. Would you be saying, look, this is from the future?
Oh, maybe, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do you think
it would have helped to sort of say, look, there will be operating systems in the future where you can get your hands on the source?
I mean, not really. I'll talk about taking it back to the Linux community because my immediate thought was imagine if you had Feisty now. And you took it back to 1995.
That's an unreleased operating system.
Well,
okay, talking about
edgy then, or FC5 or whatever. You take back a current desktop Linux operating system and show it to people in 1995. You blow the fucking doors off the place. It's loads better than everything that existed at that point, but no one's got a computer you can run it on. So it wouldn't buy you. You take back a laptop, people would go, wow, that's fantastic, but it's like owning a Cray. You know, ordinary people can't have this. And if you took Intel chips from now to Intel, they look at it and go, well, okay, but you need a 90 nanometer fab plant to make it, and we haven't got one of them. We aren't even close to that.
Yeah,
what can we do? So having it's like, you know, have you read one of the Hitchhiker's books where Arthur Dent ends up stranded on a planet and he's got all, you know, he knows all about technology and toasters and lasers and everything, but he can't actually do any of it, and all he ends up doing is being able to make sandwiches because he doesn't know how the technology actually fucking works. He explained that Hoovers exist, and then when they say how do you build one, then he goes, well, I don't know. you turn it on and you need electricity. Where'd you get electricity from? No fucking knows. So you'd have to go back and change people's minds or change opinions or change things rather than just giving them future technology.
I think you know, going back to this idea of people fucking stuff up, I mean, I really do think that we'd be reasonably further along if these people, a relatively small subset of people, you know, I think there's a, like anything, there's a lot of power held in few people's hands, and if they didn't screw these things up, then we'd be much further along. But it's to be expected, because of course with every new industry, it's people are still finding their feet, you know, and the same problems don't happen now anywhere near as much. I mean, I'd say that the companies today, like if you look at all of the distros, you know, Red Hat, Canonicals, Novell, they're all very, very savvy when it comes to open source and free software in the community. But 5 years ago, of course, it was so much different, and they did make the same. They did make these fucking mistakes.
New, slightly interesting thought, which is not a new thought from me. I've read it somewhere. Do you think that we needed the infrastructure of having a computer on every desktop that Microsoft provided by aggressively trying to put a computer on every desktop? Whether they got them there fairly or not, ignore for the moment. They put millions and millions and millions and millions of computers in the world. Without that, you know, if Linux had won and had been better in 1993 or 1998 or whatever, if it had won, it had been better, but you didn't have that massively aggressive push to convince everyone that what they needed to buy was a computer, would the world be worse off now? Do you need someone to do that hugely aggressive push first? And then once you've got all the computers out there, then move them all to Linux? If they'd all been Linux in 1995, would there still only be 650 computers in the world?
That's a really good question. I mean, I
think there'd be a hell of a lot less
different segment, really.
Definitely. It is a different segment, so I threw it in a bit late. Sorry.
I think the reason why...
I think the answer's yes, absolutely. By the way, you needed Microsoft.
I think so, yeah, I think you need Microsoft. And I think you couldn't do it with... you couldn't get a computer on every desk with a hugely fragmented market. I mean, obviously the market was fragmented back then to a point.
There wasn't a market, I think is what Ack was saying. There wasn't a desktop on everyone.
Well, there was. I mean, the Apple market.
And there were DOS computers and everything, but there wasn't... having a computer wasn't a massively routine thing. You didn't have a computer on everybody's desk in every office. There were people who had desks, and there were some people who needed computers. The people who did the finance stuff on VisiCalc, or people who needed to do computery stuff, people who did a lot of typing, wrote a lot of letters, might need a computer for a word processor. But if anyone got a job these days and went into work and didn't have a computer on their desk, and they work in an office, they'd think it was weird, and they'd say, "Where's my computer?" That wasn't the case 15 years ago, and I don't think.
Okay. Yeah.
Admittedly, 15 years ago, I was 16, so I was only just on the edges of the work market.
And the thing is, as well, is that, of course...
Aid was 94, yeah. So perhaps you could speak to us about
that. Well, you were still delivering bottles of pop.
He was delivering bottles of Sonatogen. But yeah, I mean, you know...
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think it'd be fascinating to hear what our listeners think of this.
I have got two more points on this one. The first thing is that we could possibly... stop Eric Raymond writing sex tips for geeks. And
that would be a good thing to stop.
Wouldn't have put us anywhere further forward there, really, would it?
I think it would.
Second and less important, go back and kill Hitler.
Well, the other idea that I wanted to mention was one that Jenny had, my wonderful girlfriend, in fact.
Shag Jenny.
She said if we wanted to make go back into the future and do something to make Linux more popular.
Go back into the future.
Shit, sorry.
Back to the future. I've seen a film about that.
She's going to kill you, you know, insinuating she's stupid.
No, it's me that's stupid. The idea that Jenny had to make Linux more popular these days was draw a cock on the penguin.
Not really improving the reputation of Jenny now.
I'm not seeing the enterprise people going for that, to be honest.
Yeah, I remember when I started
drawing cocks on things.
I've drawn a lot of cocks on things. I remember when I started
on yourself.
When I started getting into
to make
Linux,
up for it.
I remember speaking to this a company who shall remain nameless, who is still around, and I was chatting to this guy who was very kind of opinionated about his. No, it wasn't Ack. Yeah, opinionated about the Linux world. And he
about
said
his
to me.
Cock.
And he said to me, you know when Linux will take off? You know when it'll really hit the mainstream? And I said, when? And he said, when there's no more penguin.
Right.
And he was like, as soon as that penguin goes, you know it's hit the mainstream. And it's interesting because the penguin's always stuck around, you know. So he's fucking wrong. Yeah. Linux IT, that was the company. So there we go.
Nice.
It's the end of yet another fun and feature-packed show.
Indeed,
so it is time for the emails.
Before we over-egg the pudding a tiny bit there,
before we continue, can we just...
kick Adam in the spuds?
Apart from that, listeners, send some better fucking emails in.
Buck your ideas up. But I must compliment them on short emails.
No, we've had some good emails, but we've not had many this time, so send more emails.
That's good, keep them short though.
Short and sweet, and preferably...
like this short email from somebody called Io Null.
Really?
That's apparently their name. Ubuntu
was
rename.
Was that a song by Bross?
Not being a Bross fan.
Oh, you know.
No. Like Mr. Bacon, who clearly is a Bross fan.
No, at all. I'm a Bross fan.
In a previous episode, you described how Linux should more specifically be named GNU/Linux. Therefore,
at what point did we say that?
Fucking chug!
I clearly remember you mentioning that.
What? I said it should be GNU/Linux.
We were talking about free desktops. Anyway, he writes in and says, therefore, shouldn't Ubuntu be named GNUbuntu? P.S. I don't work for the FSF.
I don't...
Moving on.
I suspect when we discussed it, we said, if we can talk about the free desktop, should we be calling it GNU/Linux?
Yeah.
No.
That was the episode.
I'm I'm surprised if we said it should be, because we don't think so, generally.
I rambunctiously disagree with GNU / Linux.
Well, I think
Beard / Linux.
Well, I think that the GNU project deserved every credit they get first. Starting us off on the path that we've ended up on. But really, well, who gives a much of that?
So it should be Sun / Linux, anyway.
Yeah.
They contributed more of the code.
We have heard it from Fippo the Clown himself, and he's quite right about it.
Over to Mr. John O'Bacon over there.
Okay, so Matt Lee.
How did you do it? Matt Lee.
In a Matt fashion.
Didn't they make
hoverboards? Was he angry or tired?
Didn't they make hoverboards?
That was Mattel. Anagram of his
Mattel.
Name.
Mattel.
Plus, while I think about it, no, they didn't make hoverboards.
Did you see the thing about, like, the guy who directed it?
I know, they got beat. The guy who directed it, who directed Back to the Future Part 2, someone in an interview, he said, yeah, the hoverboards, they're not on sale. We managed to get hold of a pre-production run from Mattel, and fucking millions of people went to them and, where do we buy a hoverboard? My God, they're brilliant.
It's funny, because when that happened, I was going to America on holiday with my mum and dad, and I saw that thing, and I was like to my mum and dad, I need to get a hoverboard when I go to America.
Yeah. So that you can imagine, wow, because it's in America. Yeah, they have more than three flavours of ice cream in America as well, and what a cool place it is.
They have warmth in America.
Never once
have we fucking digressed away from anything.
When you say we, Jono, who do you actually mean?
Ack.
Ack suck on his hairy crack.
What's on your mind again?
Should have.
Anyway, enough of your three testicles. Guys, I think free desktop is a pretty good term. Amazes me that he thinks that.
See, I agree.
But what does it actually cover? You could argue that very few GNU / Linux distributions actually offer a free desktop. I think GNU / Linux is the most fair term.
Why is everyone saying GNU / all the time?
For most desktops.
This is Matt GNU / Lee.
Yeah, this is Matt, I believe, all of the bullshit that comes out of the FSF Lee.
Slightly harsh characterization.
He knows I'm joking. He says, I think GNU / Linux is the most fair term for most desktops with a Linux kernel, but I understand the problems this name has for many people.
Hang on. He has got a point to make.
I think that before we worry too much about the name, we should focus on getting all the main distributions to ship only free distributions first.
Still bored.
Okay, yeah, I'm equally bored.
Okay.
Hold on, so what's a non-free distribution then?
Ubuntu.
Xandros.
There's a lesson here somewhere, I think.
So, which distribution do you use?
Ubuntu.
Okay. So yes. Okay.
VRMS says it's free, but I'm still not sure about the firmware in the kernel. But okay. I can't work out a way of removing it.
Okay.
Annoying but true. I am trying.
It is annoying but true.
Why did you install it then? If it annoys you so much.
Because I didn't realise at the time. I genuinely.
You didn't realise.
No, when Warty came out.
Bam!
When Warty came out, I didn't even know what a binary blob firmware was.
But you know what it is now.
Yes, I do. And I have said to people repeatedly, if someone can help me find out where the binary bits in the kernel are, I'm happy to remove them on my machine and write a script that will help other people remove them.
Oh, so basically you want somebody else to do the hard
work. I want someone to help me because I've got no idea how to work it out.
Okay.
I've asked the GNU Sense team, and they weren't particularly helpful.
They didn't
make
any bloody GNU Sense.
They were a fucking GNU Sense.
Read your email, boy.
Email.
Some of us have got to get on a plane.
A bloke called Chess Griffin has written in.
Chess Griffin. Apparently. Is he some kind of fucking porn star?
Apparently. Yeah, Chess. Good name. Who's from the Linux Reality podcast.
Oh, fuck off.
what he wants to know is one of his listeners has said, when I go to Lug Radio Live, I'd like to take along some Linux Reality flyers.
Which is a man's podcast.
Do you, Chess Griffin, think that that's a good idea? And he said we ought to ask the Lug Radio people first. So he's asking us,
no problem. Bring them along.
Do we mind? If people advertise other podcasts at our special event, and the answer is no, we don't mind. Fine,
bring it on.
There'll be a space in the bog just for your flyers.
Everyone's welcome.
Seriously, we've got no problem with that.
Am I the only person when I hear that Chess Griffin that I just think of McBain from The Simpsons?
Nice.
Chess Griffin sounds like his stage name to me.
Chess Griffin.
That's like his porn star name, isn't it? Definitely.
Just not Chess.
Maybe it's Chez. Okay, Chez.
Shay Griffin.
That's where he lives.
Maybe it's Chav Griffin.
Okay, Shay Griffin. Yes, we've got no problem with your listener doing that. No worries.
Mr. Swatch.
Your one and only listener.
Should people listen to Linux? Has anyone listened to Linux Reality?
Nope.
Never heard of it.
Oh, dear. Harsh. So, sorry, Chess Griffin.
So, speaking of podcasts.
podcast.
Is there a URL there, by the way?
There isn't, but I'll be profoundly shocked if Googling for Linux Reality didn't bring it up. Linux Reality Podcast.
Adam Sweet.
Right, well, not for the first time since I've been here at the email section. I looked at the skies, but yet they are empty. My emails are pretty short.
No, tell us about your encounter with the Linux Action Show.
I've been on
the subject of Linux podcasts that are on us.
Yeah. I decided to broaden my Linux podcast listening recently. I've been listening to a few.
You strayed from the path.
Bloody Judas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought, well... Judas, I mean, I bought an OG multimedia player so I can listen to Lug
Good
Radio
man for
in
not
the
buying
car.
An iPod. Well done.
And I thought, well, I mean, Lug Radio takes me, like, back and
a
forth
to
work for 2 days a week. I could listen to something else on the way home. So I started listening to a couple of others. Some of them I stopped immediately. But I was listening to the Linux Desktop Show, I think. He irritated me.
What was that, Linux Link Tech Show?
No.
Stop being nasty to the TLTS people.
Linux on the desktop, he got on my nerves pretty
quickly. Why do we need that new studio again?
Eh?
Oh, yeah. That's what it was. Sorry, Adam.
Anyway. So, I've been listening to the Linux Action Show recently, a few shows, and I emailed them into the show to tell them that I thought they sounded like Bert and Ernie out of Sesame Street. And I wasn't lying.
Was that constructive criticism, no, Mr. Sweet?
Somewhat regrettably, I also included some useful information for something that somebody had emailed into the show in a previous episode. But the main thrust of my email was to tell them that they sound like Bert and Ernie out of Sesame Street. And they didn't really like that.
In what way didn't they like it?
They gave it pretty short shrift and dismissed me as being British and therefore I didn't count.
Maybe they didn't like it because they don't share a fucking bath and sing about a rubber ducky. I mean, that's one of the other reasons.
In fairness,
they're Americans, of course they do.
In fairness, just like me when I sent my email, I don't think they meant particularly any harm to me, but they dismissed it pretty quickly and slightly rudely. And also another listener emailed in the next show to say that he didn't think they sounded like Bert and Ernie either.
Well, I have to say,
interesting shit.
I'm appalled that people on a podcast would just dismiss emails that they get. That's a horrific thing to do. And we'd never do that.
Before we carry on as well, we seem to get a repeat. There's this other little podcast, this tiny little piece of shit called Hashlug Radio. We get a repeated kicking on Hashlug Radio because we don't mention them on Lug Radio. So I think it's only fair that we actually mention Hashlug Radio. So if you go to planet.lugradio.org/something, then...
Hashlug Radio. Hashlug Radio.
Gay bummers get involved. Sorry, Neuro. Sorry, this is my gaybummers.com joke / get involved.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. Whatever floats your boat. Yeah, but Hashlug Radio is a podcast about us in which they complain about us every 2 weeks. So
sounds awesome.
Go and
thanks, Aid.
Go and
really, yeah, okay.
We should do a show about them one time and just take the piss out of them. Bit of fucking sage justice.
Have you got any more emails, Mr. Bacon?
Sage justice.
You've looked at that sheet and it just...
Have you got any more emails?
You don't look inspired, Aid. I've got one email.
I'm not particularly inspired, but...
I've got an email.
Funny. Fucking jump over the fucking...
It's only a very quick one. From Andrew Mason saying, the new iRiver E10, which is brand new, supports OG. I think iRiver have learned their lesson after they fucked up the H10.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Andrew Mason, because we were bitching about... Or we thought that iRiver didn't support OG anymore because they hated freedom, but apparently that's not the case. So thank you, well done the iRiver people.
While we're plugging media players that play OG, my media player is a Kawon.
You've got a Kawon iAudio
X5.
You put a Kawon what?
No. I've got a Kawon iAudio X5. Fuck off.
So what does it sound like?
I don't know. Shut up.
Move.
No, there was you were talking about this in the last show. Some guy was going on about he wanted a OG player, hardware player, and you were going on about there's only so, there's fuck all.
Shallow
reckon there are thousands. He's clearly a lying arsehole. But the Kawon iAudio X5, I'm very, very happy with it.
There's the Neuros one as well. Although I never know whether it's Neuros, and they've gone and just nicked it off of Neuro. No,
I think he now steals things for a living. Namely hubcaps. The Haskell Justice League have got in touch again.
Are you sure it's not the Justice League of Haskell?
All two of them.
Blood splitters.
Kind of shows what this is all about.
They're bag of otters knows. This has just become like Haskell hour at the end of the show, isn't it? No one cares about Haskell. Stop writing to us.
Well, they care.
Now, hang on a second. Cultural sublimination's written in. to write about it.
£4.50 name.
I think that's
what
a stage
they,
name.
What are they, brothers called?
Must be Mr. and Mrs. Sublimination. That's
cowards. It's probably called like Bob Robbins or something.
So what she said?
And she.
Diggory Cocklover, or whatever his name was.
Diggory Cocklover.
Diggory Laycock. Plus.
He lays cock at the
plus,
weekend.
I don't know. Cultural seems to be a not very gendered name, so I guess.
Okay. On I suspect this person's confused. On Haskell and functional programming language, functional languages. Dear gents, cheers for the show. It is possibly among it's possibly among my favourite Linux podcasts.
But produced, not certainly.
It's possibly uncertain among my favourite Linux podcasts produced in the UK. So out of all of the Linux podcasts produced in the UK, of which we are the only one...
We're somewhere near the top.
We're somewhere near the top. Thanks for that complete meaningless shite.
We're possibly his favourite.
Thank you for a rather backhanded compliment, that one.
I have a remark...
Additional studio for your ego, wasn't it? That was it. No, I keep forgetting.
Don't be horrible, Tack. Yeah. I have a remark about the last episode, which is episode 73, which doubles as a suggestion for a segment. You seem to be pouring some derision over Haskell, mainly due to its lack of popularity. I don't use
purpose.
I don't use Haskell myself, but I do use OCaml. OCaml, where art thou?
Oh dear God!
It was a song by Paul Anka. That OCaml, I am thy fool, darling, I need you.
Oh, no, guys.
In the bed.
Oh God. Anyway, but he does. He/she uses OCaml, also a functional programming language. I discovered it after many years of using more traditional imperative languages such as C, C++, Java, Python, etc. All I can say is that I only regret not having started using OCaml soon. It's very high level. It's incredibly fast.
Oh, Camel. Get a language with a better name.
You smoke Camel, don't you?
So anyway, let's,
I used to.
Right.
Let's ignore all the shit. And then he/she/mixed says, so why aren't we using all functional languages like Haskell, OCaml, Clean, Scala, /board? Well, we say we're not interested in what you have to say.
So we haven't got any genuine reason to dislike Haskell.
No, here it is. Here it is. It says, but it'd be interesting to hear your views on the subject. Cheers. C Sublimination.
Okay.
It's an actual name.
Well, I ought to point out here, I'm presumably the only one among us who has any experience with functional programming languages.
Or even know what that means. Wait, is there an unfunctional programming language?
You write some code off the equal.
It means oriented around functions, not...
objects.
Not that it works. So Lisp is a functional programming language, for example. Oh, Camel, I am but a fool, darling, I need you, though you treat me cruel.
Aren't all programs based on functions?
No. The whole program is one function. For example, Haskell is...
It's the evolution of programming languages. You got started off with structured programming, then you have functional programming, and then nowadays people use...
non-functional, unstructured programming languages.
Check so Mr. I've got means... HND in computer science.
So, yeah, no,
functional means not object-orientated.
And
I'm not getting into this, because it doesn't mean that, and if I talk any more about programming language styles, I'm going to die of boredom.
Well, anyway.
But I've used functional programming languages, I hated them, this lot haven't got an opinion, so the official radio view is we hate functional programming.
And one tip towards
the
you,
thing
cultural
is you like Python, so you've got no clue about programming.
No, he just loves the Python.
One tip, cultural simulation. If you want to have any success with men/women/goats, you need to change your fucking name. It's ridiculous.
So that's what we know
John
about Haskell.
In a particularly charitable mood this week.
If someone could give us an example
of a better name,
not a theoretical example of why Lisp or functional programming languages or Haskell are actually good, but an actual real proper example why we want to do it, rather than just writing in and bollocking us for hating it without, and then saying, but it's good, and you don't understand because it's the future, right?
Hey, it was the future
someone give us a real example, we'll be happy to listen.
Well, this has been dragging on for weeks now, so it what has. I want to know, someone what, put a fucking pin in the board and say, this is what Haskell is useful for.
Yes. Mr. Large Ridge. Mr. Large Fridge. Mr. Large Ridge.
Hang on.
Is there? Did we stick a talk in LaGradio Live about Haskell? I can't remember. We had one submitted.
No, we didn't.
We did, didn't we?
No. We've had no talks about Haskell submitted as far as I can remember.
Some dude said, "Did you want to do a talk about Haskell?"
Really?
I think you ignored him.
No, I wouldn't have deliberately ignored him because we've nearly got the schedule ready.
Someone offered to talk. We've just fallen through the
net. Oh, sorry. If you offer to talk on Haskell, then please mail us at show@lugradio.org again. I'll have a look for it in case
If we can't fit you in the talk schedule, do a buff. Because I think a lot of people are interested in
or this. Or a light bulb talk.
We've given a lot more popularity to functional languages just because we hate them and people tend to like stuff that we hate.
More on light bulb talks in a second.
Yes, absolutely. But last email is from Pat Finch responding to the fact that Jono bollocked him for being a Windows user last time. And he uses... he's got a triple boot laptop. He says he boots Solaris Express and Ubuntu and Windows.
Excellent.
That's okay. He says, unlike Jono, I certainly do eat dog food. Hurrah.
I do eat the dog food. I run Ubuntu.
you run Ubuntu Edgy.
He's eaten stuff feisty when he was at...
As of when?
As of...
When he was at CBIT.
When I was at CBIT.
Pay attention.
Oh, so 3 days ago, then.
Yeah, and it's my production machine, so yes, I'm going to install it. Yes, I apologise, Patrick. I didn't... It was merely a joke.
But yes,
And my dog food tastes nicer than your dog food.
He says, yes, my laptop is a technology player. He uses Ubuntu, for God's sake. Don't bollock him too much.
Surely he's not eating his dog food, then.
Yes, he uses Ubuntu and Solaris Express.
So he only uses his dog food when...
Yes, my laptop is a technology playground, and yes, I lose a lot of data, and yes, my wife gets irritated by this.
He's a good fellow, is Patrick Finch.
Yeah, he is. I ought to suggest buying your wife her own laptop is probably a good idea.
So, let's move on.
Can
I tell a story about our special thing? Can I tell it?
What? I don't think so.
Right.
You're going to tell it anyway, though, aren't you?
Yes, indeed.
Even though I don't think you should.
Fuck you.
But you're going to ruin the surprise element.
Exactly. Thank you, Aid.
No.
That's a reasonable point.
No.
Thank you. That's 3-1.
One of which doesn't count.
What?
Adam.
Why doesn't he count?
Hold on, I'd like to have explained why I don't count.
Doesn't he count more than
all
three of us?
Counts more than the rest of us. Because you can announce it all you fucking like.
Just in case anyone's wondering, it's nothing to do with bum love either.
I think we should say what it is. I think people will go to this thing for the reason that we're going to tell them.
I'll tell you what, I say we should tell them the title, but not what it means.
Okay.
Does that seem fair?
Well, we can maybe drop a hint in the next segment. So yeah, let's build it up. Okay?
It's the end of the show. What do you mean in the next
not
segment?
Not the next show.
Oh, right, okay.
So the title is called...
This is just to set the ground a little bit here. We have pretty much now nailed down the schedule for Lug Radio Live 2007. We're still confirming with a lot of people, so we're not going to release the schedule yet. But we're hoping to have something out in the next 2 to 3 weeks with an indication of where everyone's actually going to be. So if you've... If you have submitted a talk, we'll be getting back to you shortly to say whether it's been accepted or not.
And we have some special segments in the show, such as the Master Bait.
And the Hour of Power.
And the Hour of Power.
Because that was dead popular.
And of course, Lug Radio Live and Unleashed in front of a live studio audience. And we have a new one.
We'll give
the title. The title is called... Is it Adam Sweets? Or is it Sweets?
No, Adam Sweets. The title is...
Adam Sweets...
Gong-a-thong...
Lightbulb Talk...
Extravaganza.
So what exactly is a light bulb talk? We can tell them that.
We can tell them that bit. A light bulb talk. We have main talks, and then which are about 45 minutes, and then we have lightning talks, which are about 25 minutes, and then we have light bulb talks, which are about 3 minutes.
Yeah. So
and the idea is that we're going to have
a talk in 3 minutes.
The idea is that someone gets up.
It's what everyone else in the world calls a lightning talk. Yeah. Any other conference anywhere in the globe,
they're not 3 minutes though.
You say do a lightning talk, and they're talking about a 3 to 5 minute talk.
Made. Been decided on. Well, you know,
3 to 5 minutes. Or while you were doing fuck all to do with Lug Radio Live, we chose.
You can't comment.
You were asleep.
But the idea,
asleep on another continent.
Just to clarify as well, this is 1 hour. This isn't throughout the event. This is 1 hour in which we're going to have a load of people, and anybody can volunteer. You can either come up on the day, or we'd like to know beforehand if possible. If you fancy getting up for 3 minutes and talking about something,
have a think about it. Now we're probably going to put up a big sign on the day, and then you can go. We'll have sort of 10 to 12 slots. So go up on the day and sign up if you want to do a 3 to 5
and let's remember that title again is Adam Sweets Gong a Thong Light Bulb Talk Extravaganza.
All the clues you need are in the name provided you correctly hear all the consonants.
Adam Sweets Gong a Thong Light Bulb Talk Extravaganza. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. And Adams, it was going to be Simon Willison's Gong-a-thon Light Bulb Talk Extravaganza.
He's too scared.
But he's too scared.
But he was too scared.
Yes, yes.
In his defense, I wouldn't have done it either.
Harry Potter lookalike bastard.
On the other hand, Harry Potter is speaking at this year's Lug Radio Live 2007.
And who do we think Harry Potter is?
Simon Willison.
Oh, right.
So anyone who knows Simon will have gone, yeah, Simon, when I said that. So
I think it's safe to say that on the next show we can announce the speakers at Lug Radio Live.
I think so, yes.
We've got a fantastic lineup. It's going to be
we're well pleased with it, and we've seen it, and Yao haven't.
Yeah. So and it was confirmed, and we finalised it last night.
We did.
While we were laid in bed, wasn't it?
Apart from that last bit, yeah.
We sleep in the same bed like Morecambe and Wise.
No, we don't, no.
Or Bert and Ernie from the Linux Action Show.
Yes. So now, then, now we've got the speakers list down, one of the things we want to move on to is boffs.
Yep.
So
we need more boffs.
We do need more boffs. If you're interested in running a boff at Lug Radio Live, please contact us.
One boff could be how to kill dogs when you're recording a radio show.
Yeah.
What do you feed them every now and again?
I showed you that basket I put them in.
Small.
Oh, show. Yeah.
So, good show. Should we piss off?
Yep, thank you very much.
Let us to the show at lugradio.org as normal.
And
listen to Hash to Lug Radio. Listen to Hash to Lug Radio and hear them slag us off.
Yeah, it's good fun. If you hate us as much as they do, then enjoy listening to the show.
See you later, motherfucker.
Goodbye.